Cascadia and the edge of the world, Euphemet presents Night Drift with Jim Perry.
Good evening, I'm Jim Perry, and you are listening to another edition of Night Drift, presented by Euphemet. Broadcasting tonight from my home studio in the hinterlands of the Oregon coast, directly to our mothership of 1150 AM KKNW in Seattle and worldwide at nightdrift.com. Today's been a busy day, filled with family and fun and friendly smiles and food and good times, and I just took a look around and thought about doing this program tonight, thinking about all of you who may not have the opportunity right now to see your loved ones for one reason or another, and I just want to send my love out to you and let you know that it's just for right now, and we will get there, and I appreciate you spending some time with me here tonight with our Euphemet family. So I appreciate you tuning in. And tonight's going to be a really interesting program. You know, podcasting has fundamentally changed many people's entryway into the paranormal world. I mean, for me, it opened an entirely new career path, a journey to the near abyss and back again. Many of today's most exciting and noteworthy investigators started with creating content around strange cases, and before they knew it, they've been pulled right into it as participant. Tonight is about podcasters on that very path, when the craft of broadcasting and documentary field work turns into something else, an adventure into the unknown. And tonight, podcaster Phil Rossi is here to share how he has gone from interviewing paranormal investigators to becoming one himself. Also, Nathan Paul Isaac will join us after the break. His podcast, Penny Royal, debuts a second season this month. Very excited about all of this upcoming work. It's going to be a very fun set of conversations tonight. But first, my podcast, Euphemet, returns this week. And I'm happy to share with you right now a clip from the season 5 premiere. That's right now on Night Drift.
When I was 4 years old, I believe that to be my first memory of my first memorable paranormal experience. Even though at the time I didn't know it was paranormal, it was just something I experienced. I remember sitting on a bed at my auntie's new place in Klamath Falls, Oregon. And I just remember seeing out of the corner of my eye, up towards the ceiling, just the top half of an old woman. And I remember she just kept talking like really bad to me and my cousin and saying that we're bad people and we stole her money and we're a bunch of thieves and liars and all these things. And being a little girl, right, you don't really know what to do. In my mind, it was just some older lady being mean to me. So I remember I jumped off the bed, you know, kind of mad. And I went and I ran and grabbed my grandpa and I brought him in and I said, this lady's being mean to us in here. And credit to my grandpa for not saying, oh, it's your imagination or anything. He just looked around the room. My grandpa's this big towering 6'3" man, right? And he just looked and he asked me where I saw her. And he just said, you know what? You guys aren't bad people. You're just little girls. Just don't pay any attention to her. Just ignore her. So I said, okay. And my cousin kept looking over my shoulder. I don't know if she saw it also or if she just was looking to see what I saw. And once again, the old lady started saying that we're bad people and we stole her money and give it back and all these things. And I was like, lady, we're just little girls. Just repeated what my grandpa said. And then I don't remember what happened after that. I mean, because it wasn't an odd occurrence. It was just a normal occurrence for me. But it's very interesting because it wasn't until I'd say 3 to 5 years ago, as an adult woman now, I was telling my mom, because we talk about paranormal a lot, she has abilities as well, and just to try to understand it, it always comes up in conversation. So she was asking, well, what is the first thing you remember? So I told her about this story, and her jaw dropped when I told her this lady was saying that we stole from her and we had her money and all of this. Her jaw dropped because I guess the reason that we were there in the first place, traveling with our grandparents, was to move my aunt and her family into this new house. And her husband at the time, when they were moving in, somehow kicked up, I don't know if it was a floorboard, but somehow stashed in a coffee can, they found money. It was $500, and against all of the adults at the time, better judgment, he went ahead and kept it. So seeing now, you know, that's what the old lady was talking about. Her money was stolen. It wasn't by us little girls. You know, we weren't aware of it, but yeah, she was upset. I didn't know anything about ghosts or spirits or anything at the time. You know, you're just growing up. You're just little. Your mind's more open. And she was physically there as far as my senses were concerned. You know, and when you're little, you don't know, okay, well, I'm going to talk myself out of what I just saw. You just experience the world. And I had no sense of, oh, that's not normal, or we don't talk about that, or people don't experience those types of things. So it was just reality. My reality might be different than somebody else's because everybody's senses are different. But that is what was there.
You've Met Season 5 premieres this Thursday. You can find it anywhere you listen to podcasts. We'll be releasing new episodes each week this season, in addition to continuing Night Drift. So yeah, get ready to spend a lot of time together. And I can't wait. But next, Nathan Paul Isaac on Pennyroyal in a very strange place called Pulaski County. We'll also be taking your calls tonight, 425-373-5527, or toll-free in Western Washington, 888-298-KKNW. That's on Night Drift, right after this.
Follow the show on social media at Euphemet, EUPHOMET. With Jim Perry on Alternative Talk, 1150 AM, KKNW, Seattle. Now, here again is Jim.
We are back here, and tonight with podcaster Nathan Paul Isaac joining us on Night Drift for the very first time. Nathan, welcome to Night Drift, my friend.
Oh, thanks, Jim, for having me, man.
Yeah, of course. You know, you'll be joining us for the entire program next week to talk about all of the high strangeness you have encountered, at least as much as you can unravel within an hour, that you are uncovering in Kentucky. But firstly, for tonight, tell us about your podcast, Pennyroyal.
I guess, you know, it's a pretty big story in terms of all the stuff that we found. But yeah. in a gist, I guess, if I did a 30-second pitch on it, I started investigating some strange murders here in central Kentucky, in Pulaski County. I'm in the town Somerset, Kentucky. And we started looking into some strange murders, some unsolved murders. and over the course of probably about 3 years, just started uncovering all kinds of strange things that I really didn't expect to find.
Yeah.
I think for me, the biggest part of the strangest thing about the story was that we started looking into, you know, just the murders, and then started finding all of these other strange things, you know, magical orders that were coming down here from Cincinnati, performing rituals in the 1970s,
right.
Some strange things that were happening. And a lot of this stuff was sort of centered on the 1970s period, but strange things happening at a experimental mental health facility, and just some weird characters that started appearing, historical figures. And I guess the weirdest thing was that it went from being a story about this place and the relationship of people to place, you know, and how people shape a place and how a place shapes people. And then as the investigation went on, we became more and more a part of the story in a really, really strange way. And so I think for me, that's really what this second season that's coming out on Tuesday on the 11th is about.
Really?
More so. Yeah, is sort of how we became absorbed into the story and how our actions were, in a weird way, you know, hyperstitionally, you know, that's a big part of the second season. I don't know if people are familiar with hyperstitions, but
can you describe that a little bit?
You know, it's one of those concepts that I wasn't familiar with before engaging in the research, but if people are familiar with tulpas or thought forms, or this idea that fiction can become reality in a way, that the more that you look into something or believe something, the more that can take on a real world form. That's really where the investigation and the story got to in the second season. But it really started with some local unsolved murders, and it just got stranger and stranger after that.
Now, Nathan, when you and your crew were sitting there, perhaps in that beautiful recording studio that you guys operate right out of, who originally had this idea of, listen, there's some unsolved murders in this town. We need to go hunting around to find out what's going on.
You know, I'm not from Somerset. My wife is from Somerset. And so I ended up here, you know, moving to Somerset with her. Darian West and Kyle Cadell are the co-producers, the associate producers. And Kyle, which people have probably seen Kyle on the second season of Hellier when they're here in Somerset. He runs the International Paranormal Museum here, right?
Yeah.
And it's like, how many towns have a paranormal museum in Kentucky?
Right.
And really, you know, Darian and I, we by day develop a lot of software together, apps and things like that. And that's really become a part of the investigation too. We've used a lot of technology, data mining, to investigate and kind of unravel some of this, we've developed some custom software. He's put together some amazing things because it's a giant mass of documents that we've found newspaper articles. I had some really successful FOIA requests from the FBI regarding one of the individuals in the mystery.
Wow.
And so you know, it was like, I think the FBI sent me, it was like 1600 pages, which was crazy, you know. And I was like,
yeah, little intense.
And I couldn't believe that they responded to the FOIA or that they provided so much information. But it was like those kinds of things we were trying to dig into. But Darian's from here, and Kyle's from here as well, so they were familiar with the local folklore. For me, it was just so strange, you know, coming as an outsider. And I think that's really what spurred it, was that me not knowing any of these stories, not knowing any of these people, not knowing the folklore, I was able to really approach it from that perspective of sort of an amateur folklorist. And that really, to me, was the guiding concept. You know, it's the tagline of the podcast is the magic mystery of place. And again, you know, it's this, the interplay between people and place, and that's kind of where folklore emerges. And so they kind of joined me. Kyle was running the museum. Tons of people come through the museum telling ghost stories and alien stories and all these witnesses. You know, he's ground zero for that. So
I bet.
Yeah, it's but that's how we all sort of came together and began looking into this, and then it's just been a wild ride ever since.
Now, Nathan, I'm unsure. Did you have any particular experiences before starting this podcast that led you to a place like the Paranormal Museum?
You know, for me, I've always been fascinated with high strangeness. You know, for 20 years I've been researching high strangeness, gathering stories, collecting stories, you know, very big into Charles Fort, you know, and that's one of the strange things too, is, you know, you start looking at this local folklore and I find out that there are sky falls here, you know, falls of fish, you know, and also nearby is where the Kentucky meat shower occurred. You know,
oh my gosh.
And I went to college at Transylvania University in Lexington,
okay,
about an hour
naturally.
North of here.
Right.
Yeah, right, Transylvania. So I didn't know this at the time I was in college there, but the only sample that's been preserved from the Kentucky meat shower is in their special science collection.
Wow! Yeah, and there's actually a sample that still exists.
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah, you know what condition it's in. Yeah. Who knows, you know, but how they preserved it at the time. I think it was 1896 or thereabouts that it happened. But anyway, here in Pulaski County, you know, those same things were happening, you know, and, you know, we moved down here and it's a small town. You know, I grew up in a small town in Appalachia, went to college in Lexington, which was a bigger town. So I didn't really plan on going back to a small town. So when we moved here, I was like, there's got to be something interesting.
Right. You know, I know how you feel.
You know, so it's like, what can I dig up? And so very quickly I started finding these stories, you know, and I'm like, no one has gathered any of these stories, you know?
Right. And the gathering of those and the collection of that, you're much like our friends at Liminal Earth, you know, this idea of re-mythologizing the environment, right?
Yes. Yeah. And there's a weird feedback loop, you know, that's created in that kind of situation of digging in and energizing that, because people that live here, that, you know, they take a lot of this for granted.
Sure.
You know, and now that once the podcast came out, you know, all these people started sending me stories. You know, it was like, oh, I remember this now. You know, it's that weird thing where it's like, is there anything strange ever happened here? And it's like, no. But then later, they suddenly are like, oh, yeah, there's lots of strange things have happened. Or even the murders, you know, the murders that we were looking at, it's very strange murders. And there's a long history of strange murders here.
Yeah,
but people don't see it that way, you know.
Right.
But as an outsider and as a folklorist, when you gather this stuff together, it's a preponderance of events that are undeniably strange, you know.
No, that's unreal. And that place is such a beacon. It draws people to it with the same energy that seems to keep people there, right? It's weird.
Yeah, and truly, the weirdest thing was finding out, well, not the weirdest, there are a lot of other things that have probably been the weirdest, but one of the weirdest things was discovering the whole Kentucky anomaly thing, that Pulaski County is the heart of the largest spike of geomagnetic energy in the northern, you know, North America, you know? And NASA calls it the Kentucky anomaly. They're not sure what produces it, but it's so intense here that it does slightly change the surface gravity. You know, they published papers about this. And so, you know, that was part of my research too, is this idea of how does that affect people? Because there are a lot of UFO sightings here. And I wondered, and violence. Again, you know, there's this long history of violence. So it's like, are these intense geomagnetic fields affecting people's brains, you know,
right.
Is that part of the cause? And then it's truly a physical effect of the place on the people, not just geographical or sociopolitical, you know.
Oh my gosh.
But definitely that's one of those things. And even the town itself has a saying on this old town spring that if you drink the water, you'll never leave. And you know, it's just those things. It's just those layers of weirdness that keep stacking on top of each other.
And they tried to warn you.
Right, exactly.
They tried to warn you.
It's too late, you know.
You know, you look back on the first season of the podcast, which I thought was brilliantly done. I mean, for folks that like the Euphemet podcast, for folks who really enjoy documentary style production, I mean, you have to check out this show, and you have to fall down this rabbit hole with Nathan and the rest of the crew. I mean, I wonder, you know, I've wondered what the reception of that first season would be with locals there, and you're telling me that, you know, some people are coming to you now with stories that they, you know, may have taken for granted, or, you know, just sort of swept under the rug and forgot about. What are some of the other reactions that you're getting from locals of this work?
You know, I was worried a little bit when we released it, just because it does cover some sensitive, you know, subject matter.
Yeah.
And it does air out some of the town's dirty laundry.
Sure, yeah.
And so I was really worried about more of a, I won't say violent, but, you know, just a negative backlash. But I'm involved very closely with the community and development in the community. So, you know, trying to do a lot of good things at the same time telling these stories.
Right.
So I think that's kind of helped a little bit. But the strangest reaction that we've had is right after the show was released, these weird signs started popping up around the downtown, and the signs, the first one was outside of our studio, and there were the witnesses saw three different people, two men and one woman, going around town putting these up, and the signs said things like, "This town is a cult, call the FBI." And then
what?
it mentioned all these people that are in the podcast, like people we're covering, people that were assassinated. You know, the sheriff here in town was assassinated at a fish fry, okay? While he had two apple pies in his hands, you know? And so, like, there are all these characters and these historical figures in town that did a lot of crazy things. So these signs popped up, and they had all of their names. It was talking about cyber terrorists, that none of this is real. It's the Truman Show.
What?
Yeah, and so finally it culminated with someone climbing on top of a house on the way into downtown and spray painting "This town is a cult" in gigantic letters on the roof. I'll have to send you the pictures of all this stuff. But that
unreal.
That freaked me out a little bit.
Quite
a bit, you know. Of course, right. You know, I talked to the cops about it. I'm like, hey, you know, like, is this something to be worried about? Of course, they're like, no, that's just some crazy people that live, you know, around downtown. I'm like, I don't know, man. They're mentioning things from the podcast, and this was within a week of it being released. You know?
Oh my gosh! To see such a distinct reaction right there while it's being produced, or when it's, you know, the area that it's being produced in, must have been jarring, man.
Yes.
I think
yes,
I'd feel the same way. Yeah. Well, so we're giving people, you know, some time here before the season two premieres. If you haven't caught up already on season one, do that. Check out the season two premiere on Tuesday and listen to Nathan back on Night Shift next week for an entire program to discuss season one and what to expect for season two. Nathan, where can people find all of this work at?
Pinarol is on all the major platforms. I think it looks great on Spotify. You can go to pinarolpodcast.com. You can find all the episodes there. So, check it out Tuesday. The first episode of the second season will be dropping. So.
All right. Well, thank you so much for joining us tonight, Nathan. And I'll be tuning in on Tuesday, and I'll talk to you next Sunday.
All right. Thanks so much, Jim. I appreciate it.
All right. Thank you, man. Have a great night. And we'll be back right after this with Phil Rossi and talking more about podcasters, content creators who slowly find themselves participants in the paranormal and not just interviewing paranormal people. That's after this on Night Drift with Jim Perry.
it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Drifting deeper into the night, Jim Perry is taking your calls at 425-373-5527 or toll-free in Western Washington, 888-298-KKNW-5569.
And we are back here on Night Drift. That's right, you can give us a call if you like. If you want more of this program, you can find it on the Euphemet feed, wherever you listen to podcasts. For more information, visit euphemet.com and follow us across social media at Euphemet. And don't forget, our Season 5 premiere debuts on Thursday of this week. You'll find all that information at euphemet.com. And, you know, I wonder, do you have a paranormal experience that has changed your life? Did you know you can share it with me at jim@euphemet.com? The majority of individuals who are featured on Euphemet are listeners who reach out and want to share their story. So, listen, if you're interested in that and you want the opportunity to potentially have your story featured on Euphemet, reach out, jim@euphemet.com. And now, Phil Rossi is an author, musician, producer, podcaster, and voice actor. His writing, podcasts, and music have been nominated for numerous awards over the years. He lives outside of Washington, D.C., in Virginia, where he raises his two daughters. He performs as a solo artist and in several bands throughout the D.C. metro area. And according to Phil, rock clubs now aren't the only dark places he's been spending time at night at. Phil has taken up paranormal investigation. Phil, welcome to Night Drift, my friend.
Jim, thank you so much for having me on the show. And honestly, when we were in that 30-second countdown, I was chuckling a little bit over here because I had that moment of just the whole journey kind of caught up with me in an instant. And I had to laugh because as I have asked on this journey that I've been on just this last year, more than once, what is going on? How did I end up here? And here I am tonight. Hopefully to talk about that a little bit, but thank you so much for having me on here.
Absolutely. I love it that, you know, at the 30-second break, you had an experience there. So a perfect time to dig into it. Yeah. You know, so you've gone from interviewing paranormal investigators to being out in the field yourself.
Yeah.
I want to know exactly what your rabbit hole looked like, but first tell us a little bit more about your background and your podcast.
So it's funny. I've been podcasting about 17 years now. Started around a time where no one really even had an inkling what a podcast was. On my first website for my stories, I had to have a FAQ that specifically answered just what is a podcast. which is wild,
right?
Which is totally wild. And I started off with a podcast about writing to encourage myself to kind of be more disciplined about my own writing.
Sure.
And then that evolved into podcasting some stories. And then I podcast one of my first novels, and then it just kind of snowballed from there.
Yeah.
And, over the years, that's really was my main outlet for my fiction, for my short stories and what have you, was podcasting. I hadn't ever really considered a format change until I started listening to fantastic shows like Euphemet and Strange Familiars and so on. And that kind of opened this door, this inspiration, saying, well, this has played an important role in my life, even in just the last several years, in terms of a great escape for me. It's been a means of perspective. And I've so enjoyed hearing people's stories. And I love telling stories, as I've probably made clear at this point. And there's just so much value in that. And there's so many incredible stories out there. So many people have had incredible experiences. I wanted to be able to be part of that voice of the community, to be able to get those stories out there. And that's where the idea for my podcast, Don't Turn Around, was born.
Yeah. And how has your experience been with this new version of your podcast?
It has been that experience that I think content creators will search for maybe for their whole lives, where they have that moment of, this just feels right. And that's what Don't Turn Around has become for me. It just feels like what I'm supposed to be doing.
Yeah. Oh, man. That's so powerful.
It really
so
is.
It's so big.
It's huge. It's huge. I can only think about it in sort of bite-sized portions, so it doesn't overwhelm me. But and at the same time, the guests I've had on the show, I've shared conversations with some incredible people that have really opened up my whole perception of reality. It's challenged my perspectives. And in that sense, I feel like I've grown as an individual as well, just through talking to so many incredible people.
Yeah. As it happens to be, right? I mean, you take so much in just by becoming a great listener, right? Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, and I thought I had some fairly fixed kind of ideas about what I believed, even
though
that
right?
paranormal.
What did you believe before?
I felt that a ghost was a ghost. Mm-hmm. Bigfoot was likely a primate. UFOs were aliens. Sure. They were their own thing, right? Siloed. And in this time, I have come to really adopt the view that there is this greater whole, that there is a level of interconnectivity between all these incredible phenomena that just even forces us as explorers of the unknown to test the bounds of our own imagination and abilities to conceptualize all this.
What do you feel got you to that place?
Again, I mean, I have to default back to the incredible guests that I've had on the show, sharing their stories, sharing their perspectives, and that has had a tremendous amount to do with it. And then, of course, my own experiences getting out there in the field have really served to validate some of these thoughts.
Yeah, you got a lot of Keelians on your podcast.
Yes, indeed.
You're spreading the good word.
Yeah, that's right.
You know, and now you find yourself out in these haunted locations that you were inquiring about your interview guests. Yeah. How in the world did this happen, Phil?
You know, and what's funny, I kind of looked back through my shows, and you were my third guest.
Oh, wow.
And on a side note, I was listening to the numerology episode just the other day, and I was thinking, all right, Jim was guest number 3. Today is the 9th day of January. Where is this 6 going to come into play before the day is over? That kind of struck me as, again, another, maybe not a synchronicity, but something interesting that just kind of falls along with all this. Right. But when I had you on the show, I hadn't really considered that I was going to go out and do it. Mm. And I'm not sure exactly when that kind of lightning bolt struck me, but I listened. One of my favorite podcasts is Strange Familiars, hosted by Timothy Renner, who's fantastic. Yeah. And he and his occasional co-host and partner in crime, Chad Redding, would go out and do these wilderness investigations. They take a recorder with them. And at the same time, I was seeing people do something similar on the social media, going out in the daytime. And it struck me that, well, you know, I don't have to go find a haunted house to go experiment with this. I have a wealth of battlefields in the area that I live in.
Oh,
in
sure.
In fact, there's one about 10 minutes away from my house here in Virginia.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yes. I mean, the Civil War raged right through this area. We're only an hour and change south of Gettysburg. But there's this battlefield, Ball's Bluff Battlefield, just outside of Leesburg, Virginia, which has a fair share of ghost stories attached to it. And so I went onto Amazon with a very limited budget, and I ordered a K2 meter and a spirit box, and went out with my H4, which I've used for the last 17 years for various podcasts and music, right, music applications. And I took it out there, and not, you know, I wouldn't say much really happened while I was out there, but what did happen was I experienced that state of investigation. And I say state because it's your mindset shifts as you start to kind of reach out to the other, reach out to that bigger reality. And it's,
yeah.
And it was such an incredible feeling. Once I kind of got over the awkwardness of asking questions to the thin air,
right,
and got into that zone, I was hooked instantly. And I said, this has to become a thing. I've got to get into this a little bit more. I reached out to my dearest best friend, T. Morris, and said, hey, how would you like to do this for real? Because we play a video game called Phasmophobia. We've been playing it for several months. It's a ghost hunting, quote unquote, ghost hunting game experience. And
really,
and I said to him one day, I said, why don't we do this for real? Would you be interested in doing this with me? And he said, well, yeah, why not? And he
you're like, we don't need no game.
Yeah, yes, exactly. And he hasn't looked back since either. And so that was really kind of the beginning of it. And after that, things went fairly quickly from there.
Community is so important in this stuff. I mean, if you can get someone to go and do this stuff with you and not look at you like you're going crazy, I mean, that is a plus. I mean, listen, there's situations where I imagine that first moment you were out there kind of asking questions into nothing. Did you have any reservations about what you were doing at that point? Were you still the reluctant hero at that point in time, Phil? Or were you kind of like, no, this feels right?
Oh, I was still reluctant. I was still reluctant until the moment I was walking away and processing what I had just been doing.
And how did that feel?
Moment that it felt, again, there was that sense of rightness, and where the reluctance came more from, what if a hiker walks by and they, you know, see me standing by this tree with my eyes closed? Right. So then it was like, well, you know, let a hiker walk by. That's fine. I don't care because I'm really into what I'm doing.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's fabulous. And listen, I mean, you've been podcasting for, you know, 17 years. You're an OG of podcasting. Your new podcast is relatively fresh, right? Mm-hmm. And this positioning in sort of exploring, you know, real life paranormal phenomenon and not fiction is a newer element to what you're doing, right?
Yeah.
You got attached pretty quick, man. And that those tentacles pulled you into the abyss real quick.
Yeah, the rabbit hole, I mean, it must have been oiled because I went right in. Zero resistance whatsoever.
Right. So now you're in, and now you're probably developing, you know, sort of what your style is, the places that you like to investigate, you know, sort of what is it to be an investigator, you know, and not just a storyteller. Even though I would say maybe they're more similar than not, actually. But you described to me, in personal conversation, some of the locations you've been to. And would you tell us a little bit about one of the first places that maybe made a real impact on you?
So I'll say the first place, which was not the first place we went out to, but I think this was the first moment where I was able to say that I was absolutely an investigator. And it was when T. Morris and I, back in October, the week before Halloween, we did a 12-hour lockdown investigation in this location known as Crescent SCI. That's Crescent State Correctional Institution of Pennsylvania.
Whoa.
So it's this massive, sprawling complex that was a prison up until 2013, and then it was shut down due to just some egregious civil rights violations, and they just closed the whole operation. Before that, it was a mental institution. Mm-hmm. And then before that, it was a tuberculosis sanatorium. Wow. So it has, I mean, it kind of checks most of those boxes to be an area that has that energy.
Right.
But what was so striking about this experience was that, you know, it was the single longest end-to-end investigation that we had done. I mean, previous to that, 3-4 hours maybe, with the exception of an overnight, we had done at a bed and breakfast back over the summer. But this was 12 hours at this location. There was no electricity. It was about 42 degrees out maybe. And we were at the tail end of a nor'easter, Jim. So it was this like constant drizzle. Yeah. And when the sun went down, this thick fog rolled in and obscured the entire campus. And it was the most astounding, atmospheric, inspiring set of like just environmental variables.
Yeah.
We had these little maps that the folks hosting the event had given us, and they're like drenched, and we're walking through the fog trying to find our way over to, I think it was the hospice building, and you can't see any of the buildings. It's dark. We had a lantern, but it's just fog. And then these buildings would just loom out of the fog like a living thing. They would just rise up out of the fog. And in those moments, it's where I really felt that, you know, we're out here, we're doing this, you know, rain, snow, fog, we're going into these buildings that are just, you know, dilapidated, the textbook sort of scariest place you could probably conceive of going into. And yet we are going into these, into the shadows, trying again to connect, trying to be a voice for these stories that have been forgotten over the years, that were forgotten when these buildings were shuttered and when they took all the files out and put up the padlocks. Right. And that's what is one of these aspects that makes this so exciting. And so just, I find, and my partner and I find so much value in, is that, you know, we get to tell these stories. So as you kind of alluded to earlier, you know, for me, storytelling and investigation, they go so closely hand in hand. They're on that same sheet of paper. Maybe it's folded one way or another, but they are connected. And you know, we had some interesting things happen there. We saw some shadow figures. We had some incredible responses on our equipment. But overall, I mean, it was more than just what we experienced there. It was the overall experience that I think will make this one of the most memorable investigation moments that I have had. It was overwhelming at times. Again, just the length and just being in these dark places, it was definitely overwhelming. Not so much from a fear standpoint, just it was just a lot to process. And in some of these places, in particular, there was the solitary confinement area from the prison, where some of these inmates had been locked up for 23 hours a day. I think one of them had been locked up there for upwards of 17 years in that capacity. And so there was a lot of heavy, heavy energy in that spot. And I walked into one of those cells and was immediately just overcome with emotion, just such a gut deep sadness that I had to leave that area for a minute because it was just so intense.
Okay, well, let's talk about this for a second. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of individuals will go into investigation and they will purely rely on gadgetry.
Yeah.
What you're telling me is that you are affected by these places and their energy. Is that a surprise to you? And do you feel like you have empathic abilities?
So it's not a surprise to me. I do feel on some level that there's a sensitivity there. And I think we, all of us, all human beings have that wiring, right? There might be certain switches that are not flipped for all of us. And it might not be a conscious thing of those switches being flipped. Maybe they get flipped over time because you're in these environments and they get toggled enough. But
right.
I have had that sensitivity. And I find that the more in the moment I can be, the more connected to the present, the more mindful the more those doors are kind of open and the more in tune I am to it. Yeah. I just have to be careful not to get, again, distracted by things like the gadgets. I love the gadgets. I'm a big nerd. So the gadget aspect of investigating is something that is very appealing to me.
Mm-hmm.
But sure. I really see all the gadgets we use almost as like focal devices for like the D&D nerds out there. Those, they're like our arcane focuses, right? It gives us,
I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
No, just I'm playing. Yeah, I get that sense, you know.
Yeah, I find it helps you get into that mindset, and if you have interactions on the gear, it kind of helps foster that vibe, that focus. It gets you into that headspace. So I think the feelings that we have and then the gear that we use, again, go, you know, are very, very closely related. I view, for example, my REM pod in the same way that I view, you know, a pendulum or dowsing rods.
Yeah.
Granted, one is more technologically sophisticated, but I feel like the ends of that device are just the same. It's a means to connect.
Listen, do you think through this new adventure that you're on that you've gained a new understanding of the life of a paranormal investigator? And was there anything about that that surprised you?
You know, that's a great question. I think one aspect that I was, I don't know if curious is the right way to describe it, but going into some of these investigations, some of the investigations are lighter than others, and it's more of a, you're having a good time, it's, you're excited and you're out there and you're doing it, but it's fairly light. And then some of these investigations that you go to will take you down a very dark path. You're going to experience some dark things. I was always intrigued by the processing aspect of it, and something I get into on Don't Turn Around with my guests. But what surprised me, I guess, is that when the smoke settles and you wrap up the investigation and you go home, say after one of these darker experiences, is that it is possible to process those events and somewhat return to more of an objective view of them, right? I did wonder if for these more intense moments, if you're just a little bit, for lack of a better description, if you just end up a little bit messed up after some of these things,
right?
And I think that's a risk. You know, maybe we are safe enough in our approach that when we get that, you know, when we get that feeling that it's time to wrap up shop, that we're not putting ourselves in danger of having that happen. But at the same time, it was something that I did wonder, that as we do more of these intense investigations or investigations that you think are going to be light that end up more intense than you would have expected, how will that impact my human experience going forward? And I found even from the darker moments, some of the scares we've had, some of just the intense moments, that at the end of the day, even if it's felt negative at the time, it comes out as a positive one, not just from, you know, having those experiences, maybe being able to validate them with an EVP or something we caught on the camera, but then also understanding that you can be in this intense moment, you can find that bravery to stick it out, and you get through it, and then you're left with this sense of, wow, you know, I'm stronger, I am braver than I would have realized. I'm probably even a little braver now after getting through that. So I think that has been an unexpected reward. And that has caught me by surprise a little bit, because if I go and look back to when I was a younger kid and I was into the paranormal, if I told my young self that, oh yeah, you're going to sit in the dark basement of a hospice building with a blindfold on, listening to these voices in the complete dark, and you're going to be fine. Yeah, I would have probably slapped my older self.
Right. Right. Well, it's amazing to hear the journey that you're on right now, and we'll have to have you back for an entire program to talk about some of the investigations that you're involved in and just that gradual process. I love that we've caught you right here at the first. Yeah. So people out there can experience what that experience is like. And so thank you so much for joining us tonight, Phil. And where
pleasure,
can people man. Check out your work?
Yeah, so on the social medias, Instagram is where I'm most active, and that's at Don't Turn Around Podcast, and that's on Instagram. Otherwise, if you go to philrossimedia.com/DTA, that's where you're going to find Don't Turn Around, which is also available on all the major podcatchers out there as well.
Fantastic. Well, thank you so much, Phil, and thank you for listening, everyone. To Night Drift with Jim Perry on Alternative Talk, KKNW 1150 AM Seattle. Hear the show anytime on its podcast feed, wherever you listen to them. Go to euphemet.com for more and join us next Sunday. And until then, keep looking up.
Follow Night Drift with Jim Perry on Spotify and subscribe on Apple Podcasts to receive new episodes of Night Drift automatically and gain access to all of our past episodes.